Hey, it's Maz. Are you tired of small inconveniences that always turn into big headaches at home? Well, my friends at Rodenizer Home Services can make small fixes like repairing leaky faucets, adding or replacing electrical outlets and lights, or clearing slow drains that will provide big comfort for your home. And with over 10,000 five-star reviews, Rodenizer's expert technicians are just a call away and ready to fix those inconveniences at your home. Experience the difference with Rodenizer Home Services. Visit Rodenizer.com to schedule today. That's Rodenizer Home Services. Nice people, great service since 1928.
This looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz.
Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Store, T-Mobile, Needham Bank, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Jordan's Furniture, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, Gravely Lawnmowers, AceTicket.com, WFXT-TV, and Mohegan Sun.
Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Runner will take off, and there's a swing and a high fly ball. Deep left center, Benintendi has room, no, he's there. He makes the catch, and that will do it. The Red Sox get to 80 wins faster than anybody. Martinez with another monster night. Jackie Bradley with a home run. Mitch Moreland had a huge one as well. And the Red Sox take game number one. It goes extra innings, TC, but now 80-34.
Well, that's how it ended last night in Toronto. Red Sox end up beating the Blue Jays. 10-7 was your final score. Again, remaining nine games ahead of the New York Yankees in the American League East. And there's a simple question to ask with regard to the Red Sox this season, and really of late in particular. I think this applies because of the nature of games the nature of the games that the Red Sox have been playing here in the last several days. But before we get to that, I want to ask Jim Murray something back at our studio in Dorchester. And we have been broadcasting today from Gillette Stadium down here. Felger Maz was on site for the Patriots workout before the preseason opener tomorrow night against the Washington Redskins. And obviously you can hear that game right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. And we will take your calls tonight on the Red Sox up until 7 o'clock, 617-779-0985. So, Murray, I received an email in my inbox within the last, like, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes, maybe. So I need your opinion on something.
Okay.
Okay? The subject line on this email says W-I-N-E-R. Let me spell that again for you. W-I-N-E-R status. Do you think that's winner or whiner?
Well, he's certainly missing a few letters either way.
Okay, well, what do you think?
Probably whiner. He's missing the H. I'm guessing this gentleman wants to go with whiner status is what the subject
okay,
is.
Okay, so then the email says you are the biggest W-I-N-E-R, which I'm going to read as whiner.
Uh-huh.
You are the biggest whiner sports radio has ever seen. You don't act like a little child, but more so like a baby. Go ride your tractor.
Tractor?
Hold on, you'll understand in a minute. Go ride your tractor, lose some weight, sell some insurance or other items you guys pitch for freebies. Oh, by the way, just because someone doesn't act or respond the way you think they should doesn't make you right. Enjoy the preseason. So I think he was actually responding, Murray, to something we said about the Patriots, but something tells me that he's going to be just as upset at me for what I say about the Red Sox. Again, the Red Sox beat the Blue Jays last night. 10-7 was the final score. And so, Murray, very simple question. Was that a good win or a bad win?
Bad win. It was a bad win.
Why?
Because of the bullpen and the concerns that I and anyone with a brain and working eyes should have about that bullpen and how many times that they blew it and wanted to give that game away. Look, you can never count this team out, especially against bad competition like Toronto, because of the offense and specifically because of J.D. Martinez. But that was a bad win last night because of the strong concern that it continues to grow game by game when it comes to the Red Sox bullpen this year.
Okay, so look, to me, that part is, like, that's a given, and I'm surprised as many fans are getting as upset about this as they are. Last night, the Red Sox, and really, Kimbrel was the primary culprit last night, but even so, you have to add the other relievers into it, because Marcus Stroman pitched a good game against the Red Sox last night, And the Red Sox are doing everything in their power to hang in the game despite a wretched performance by Drew Pomeranz. And nonetheless, one by one, as their relievers got into the game in the late innings, they all failed. Joe Kelly gave up a run. Matt Barnes gave up a run. So the Red Sox ultimately were down. Going into the top of the eighth inning, they were down 3-1. Okay? They score four times, go ahead 5-4, and then Barnes gives up a run. They were up 5-3. Barnes gives up a run to make it 5-4. Then Kimbrel goes in and blows the save. So it's easy to point at Kimbrel. But if Kelly doesn't give up a run, Kimbrel doesn't blow the save. If Barnes doesn't give up a run, Kimbrel doesn't blow the save. Kimbrel gave up a solo home run with one out to Justin Smoke. But then Kimbrel did give up the home run, and we'll get to him specifically here in a minute. But really, you weigh it out, they all failed. And then even Tyler Thornburg, who got into the game in the 10th, after the Red Sox scored five runs, he gave up a two-run homer to make the game 10-7. Now, the gap was so big that the home run didn't matter. But the bottom line is that you look at the Red Sox relief corps, and if they are going to give up runs in the late innings of a close game to the Toronto Blue Jays, what is going to happen in October? And so, again, this brings you really to a fundamental question. Does it matter how you win? Because the Red Sox have won at a historically high rate here during this regular season. Does it matter how? Or is a win a win a win no matter what? And does it translate into October no matter what? Because I personally don't think it does, and this is why the bullpen concerns me. And I'll tell you specifically what Red Sox team in the past this club is starting to remind me of. But I'll tell you what, we'll get to your phone calls here right away, 617-779-0985. We will kick it off tonight with John, who's in a car. John, what do you got?
Hey, how's it going? Just real quick, Murray, you came into my restaurant a couple weeks ago and had some pot stickers and a beer, and you're a class act. It was a pleasure. I want to say that it's not even the bullpen that just concerns me. It's the pitching staff as a whole. To your point, no, I don't think a win is a win. I think the past couple of years, this team has been excellent in front-running situations. And though they have shown an ability to come back this year, we've seen Porcello, Sale, Price, you name it, all these guys get lit up in the playoffs by teams like Cleveland, Houston, and the Yankees. I don't really care that we can beat Toronto. I don't trust our starters, never mind our bullpen. Our bullpen's been horrendous. I can't think of a time recently in which they've come in and done a decent job, even just like putting water on the flames. I don't know how you couldn't be concerned. It's great, but I mean, they won the pennant, but the pennant is done. So all these wins now are fluff. If J.D. Martinez is David Ortiz, then maybe we have something to talk about. But otherwise, our hitters have not performed well against good pitching in big moments. And I don't know why anybody could feel so excited about how they're going to do in the playoffs. But maybe I'm wrong.
Okay, so John, look, I feel better about the offense than I have in other years. But I do worry about their ability to protect leads in close games and late innings in October. I do. Barry, go ahead quickly.
So I agree that the bullpen is a problem. The Red Sox are winning despite the bullpen rather than because of it. But when you look at the American League, what team has lights-out bullpen? The Yankees didn't cover themselves with any glory this past weekend with the bullpen. Cleveland has been a wreck the whole year, and Houston had a resort to getting Osuna. So nobody has a good bullpen.
Okay, so Barry, I agree with you in particular on Houston. But the question isn't really whether the bullpen is good. The question is whether the bullpen is better than yours. And when you get into a close game in the late innings, can that team beat you as a result of it? So the Yankees last night, Zach Britton got into that game in his first save situation as a member of the Yankees. Interestingly, Aaron Boone bypassed Aroldis Chapman to bring Britton into that game, and Britton blew the save. Okay, so now the Yankees ended up winning the game, a lot like the Red Sox did, even though they blew a save in it, and I still think New York's bullpen is better than Boston's. I will take my chances with Chapman, Patances, Robertson, and Britton over the guys who are in the Red Sox bullpen. And again, just go over the four guys who pitched last night. Kelly, Barnes, Kimbrel, and Thornburg. And if you want to throw Heath Hembree into the list or Brazier into the list, fine, throw them on the list. I still think the Yankees' bullpen is better than yours. So that's the question. And ultimately, if you want to say the ends justify the means, fine. You can win without a good bullpen. It's possible. I think it's unlikely, but it's possible. The Houston Astros did not have a great bullpen last year. They won the World Series. But is that really the model you want to follow? Because I don't think it is. And when I look at Red Sox history, the team this is starting to remind me of, and I'll tell you what, maybe it's just because of the last week. Let's go back to last Thursday. The Yankees come in here. They get ahead. The Red Sox then rally and come from behind and win the game. They give up 7 runs that night, but they won anyway. Then in the finale against New York, the Red Sox rallied, and they again had to come from behind, even though their bullpen allowed the lead to grow late in that game, and they won the game anyway. And then last night, again, they come from behind, they rallied, they win the game. But in none of those games would I say their bullpen pitched well. And I would also tell you that the first caller tonight brought up an interesting point. Name me a game from this year, and undoubtedly it exists, but name me a game where you remember the Red Sox relievers going out there and nailing down the win. Tell me when that was. Or when you got to the seventh inning and said, well, they'll give the ball to Kelly, they'll give the ball to Barnes, they'll give the ball to Kimbrel, and that's it. We got this one. I don't feel that way with this team. Okay, I don't. More importantly, I don't think Alex Cora does either. Which brings me to the Red Sox team that this team is starting to remind me of. Okay, and I'll tell you who that is and why when we come back. But in the interim, 617-779-0985 is your number on the Baseball Reporters. I'll tell you that team when we come back, and we'll continue with your phone calls.
From the field.
You're the one who threw the pitch.
To the clubhouse.
They're a reliever short.
To the corner office.
That sends all the wrong messages.
We have the Sox covered.
Because that's the way I look at it.
The Baseball Reporters on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Matt Barnes. Heath Henry,
Doc
Joe Kelly, and those other guys.
It's time to spin the wheel of gutless bums. Red Sox manager Alex Cora is faced with a tough decision. Who to use in a high leverage situation late in the game? Now, let's spin the wheel.
And today's gutless bum is the jackpot of some.
Travis edging off second with one away. And another play on. He throws it into the outfield. Travis up heading to third base. He will stop there. Joe Kelly with the throwing error. Red Sox made 2 errors in the inning. Knocks that one toward the alley. Rookie Betts won't get it. He'll take a hop up against the wall. Solari rounding third. He's going to try and score, and he will. And a 2-base hit by Maley to cut the Red Sox lead to 1.
Just stays right on top of that fastball out over the middle from Barnes.
Well, the 3-0 pitch. There's a shot. Driven deep. Back it goes. It is gone. Of late for Craig Kimbrel. He has blown a save here tonight, and we are dead even. They're up by 5 here in the 10th inning. Tyler Thornburg coming out of the bullpen, and many of the Blue Jay fans have long since vacated Rogers Center.
Ooh.
There's a high deep right left field. You can kiss this one goodbye. That's gone into the second level. Pilar tags it. That'll make it 10-7. So they keep on swinging it.
So again, it's a simple question. Do the ends justify the means? Does how the Red Sox win matter? Or is it just about the W's? And before I tell you what team this reminds me of, and I mean prior edition of the Red Sox from a different season, the one thing I think we all have to agree on, because I've been a big believer in this, over the last couple of years, I have felt like the Red Sox have missed an edge. That there hasn't been an intensity to them and a competitiveness to them that I think is necessary to be able to win at the highest level. The 0-4 team had it. Those guys just were, they'd fight you on a street corner if they had to just to prove a point. And so these guys, and obviously 2013 with Johnny Gomes, they had it. Now, and every team possesses it in a different way, but Schilling had it. Like there's a certain makeup there that I think is necessary to win some of these games, particularly when they matter against good competition in October. And I think the Red Sox have lacked that the last 2 years. Okay, they just didn't feel all that tough to me. Now they're starting to feel tough. And so Mookie Betts gets knocked on his ass in Baltimore and hits a home run. and J.D. Martinez gets the opportunity to hit a three-run home run to get him back in a game, and he does. And I just think there's a competitiveness and a relentlessness to them that I've not seen. And I'll tell you what that team reminds me of. But first, I want to go to your calls because Robert in Boston has a guess. Robert, go ahead.
Hey, so my quick thought here was just that thanks for having me, by the way. My quick thought here was that this team reminds me of Big Poppy's last season in Boston. And I think that was the season Farrell just, in my opinion, just totally mismanaged the team in the last month of the season. But in my opinion, and I want to hear what your thoughts are on this, I think in the same position, Cora, as a manager, just has so much more control over the team than I think Farrell did, in Big Poppy's last season when they totally tanked and then blew it in the playoffs. Interested to hear your thoughts there.
Okay, so Robert, you're talking about the 2016 Red Sox, and this is not the group I'd compare the. That is not the group that I would compare this team to. In fact, I think they're better than that. Remember, that team didn't have Chris Sale. So David Price get into October and get his face kicked in, and none of these guys were ready for the postseason yet, whether it was Betts or Bogarts or whoever else. They all played poorly. So I don't think it's that team. I'll tell you, the team that this team is starting to remind me of a little bit is 0-3. Now, that offense was better than this one. But the 0-3 Red Sox, go back and look at it. They had bullpen problems all year long, and they won anyway. They won anyway. They had a historic offense. In fact, I think that's the one that set the record for slugging percentage in a major league season by a team. That is the one that started with David Ortiz on the bench, and then he became a regular part of the lineup. You know, Johnny Damon, Kevin Millar, Bill Miller. Like, they were loaded. Okay, that team was loaded offensively. And they scored a ton of runs, and they won in spite of their bullpen. And then they got to October, and their bullpen actually started to pitch well in the LCS. But you know what happened? The manager was so traumatized by his bullpen from the regular season, he couldn't see the forest through the trees, and he sent Pedro back out for the eighth inning in New York. So I think that was all related to the bullpen problems they had all year long. If you think Alex Cora can endure that, you might be right. Maybe he'll put David Price in the bullpen, and he'll have a better idea of how he wants to handle it late in the year. Because right now, take a good look. Tell me, who's the eighth inning guy? And if you don't know, maybe you have an opinion. Who does Cora think the eighth inning guy is? And I'm telling you, Cora doesn't know. Cora, to me, it feels like it's changing all the time. Sometimes it's Brazier in the eighth. It was Kelly in the eighth for a while. Then it was Barnes. Brazier got a little time out there, but maybe Hembree now? I don't know. I think he wants to avoid the eighth entirely. He wants to try to go right to Kimbrel. I don't think Cora has an answer for who the eighth inning guy is, at least not yet. And that's a problem. Nate's in Orlando. Nate, what do you got?
Hey, Maz. Yeah, so I totally agree with you that this bullpen is just, it's just awful. It can't be trusted. I saw an article today.
So, Nate, look, I'm going to stop you for this reason, okay? Because it's the second time I've heard it today. The bullpen is not awful. They're not awful. It's a pretty good bullpen. It's not a great bullpen, and it has holes, but it's not god-awful. But go ahead.
Okay, yeah, god-awful might be strong, but they just can't be trusted. So in the eyes of a Bostonian, that's awful. But I read an article today on Mass Live, and Alex Cora mentioned Stephen Wright. He said that he could possibly come back this season. So I just wanted your opinion if you think that Stephen Wright – well, A, should Boston fans have any optimism about him coming back? And B, do you think he could have any kind of impact – as the seventh or eighth inning guy, possibly, for this postseason.
Okay, so, Nate, look, I hope Wright does come back. It does feel like he's making less progress than a lot of the other guys. Certainly, Eduardo Rodriguez is heading in the right direction. Excuse me. I think Chris Sale is scheduled to pitch on the weekend now. He's going to pitch on Sunday against the Orioles. So, from that standpoint, I do think that there is, there's hope long-term for the starting rotation. But in terms of Wright specifically, it doesn't sound like he's making any progress. And then beyond that, do we really want to send a knuckleballer out to the mound in the eighth inning of a playoff game? With all due respect to Tim Wakefield and Phil Niekro and all those other guys, too unpredictable. because it's just too unpredictable. You need something more certain than that. Now, if you're asking me, the guy they're going to send out there is Price. If it's not Price, it'll be Eovaldi. But they are going to add someone out there, and maybe Eduardo Rodriguez, I wouldn't eliminate him either. Somebody out there who can throw hard and get him a strikeout and can throw strikes consistently. That's the big thing. Okay, Price last October, Price was a force. He was a force in September, and he was a force in October. So Price, I can totally see being added into that mix in the bullpen. And based on how he's thrown, I wouldn't rule out Eovaldi either. Again, 617-779-0985. We'll continue with your calls. Also, I want to touch on a big moment in last night's game that should not go overlooked. We'll get to J.D. Martinez after Murray gets you caught up on headlines.
Here's the thing I find most amazing. Baseball gets caught up.
You don't quit on your team.
When you want to win, play through anything.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And his 2-0. As a rocket, smoked into the corner, and that ball is gone! Home run, J.D. Martinez! And the Red Sox are on top in the eighth inning. He hit a rocket right into the foul screen, and the Red Sox have the lead.
All right, if you want to shove J.D. Martinez down my throat, now's your chance. Now's a good chance. The timing is good. Boy, what a year this guy's having. What a pickup. Murray, if I were to ask you the single greatest difference between the Red Sox of this year versus the Red Sox of the last 2 years, what would you say?
Balls.
And J.D. Martinez.
Well, sure, yeah. I mean, in terms of a specific player, without question, it's J.D. Martinez.
I mean, what a game changer this guy is.
I don't know why anyone is pitching to him at this point.
So this is a good point. And last night, to give you an idea of the situation, it was a 3-2 game. And again, we're talking about the eighth inning here. 3-2 in the eighth inning. It's not like it was the sixth or the fifth where you'd say, why would you walk in the fifth inning, pitch to him, see what happens later, and make the judgment later on in the game. No. This was the eighth. Okay, this was the eighth inning. Really. I mean, just absolutely unbelievable when you think about it. Two outs in the eighth, first and third. It is a 3-2 lead at that time for the Blue Jays. And they, a 3-1 lead. Do I have that right? No, 3-2. 3-2 lead because it was a 3-run homer. 3-2 lead for the Blue Jays, first and third. And they pitch to the guy that has done more damage than any hitter in baseball this year. When you have Xander Bogaerts on deck, who has swung the bat poorly now since coming back from that hit-by-pitch in the Philadelphia series. And I love Bogaerts, but the reality is it's a no-brainer. I don't care who's hitting behind J.D. Martinez. You don't pitch to J.D. Martinez in that spot, especially after getting behind 2-0. They did. They threw him a fastball middle in, and he yanked it out of the ballpark. Red Sox go up 5-3. It really was still the biggest play of the game, despite what happened with Craig Kimbrell later on. Everything else, J.D. Martinez hits it out. He's closing in on 100 RBI. And so I want to get this off my chest. That was an MVP kind of moment. You could almost feel it coming. Like the Red Sox were rallying finally. Stroman had to come out of that game. And maybe the Red Sox caught a break there too. Like, we're probably not talking about that. Stroman went back out for the eighth. And then had an issue with a blister or something on his finger that honestly I didn't even follow up on, and I should have. Then he had to come out, and the Blue Jays went to their bullpen, and the Red Sox immediately began to rally. Right, Ryan Tepera came into the game. Holt struck out. Then Leon doubled, Betts walked, Benintendi singled. Okay, to load the bases. So Moreland grounded out, but the Red Sox got a run home, so it's 3-2. Jeez, I wish I could get the score right. It's 3-2, first and third, two outs, and Martinez came up. And they pitched to him, and he delivered. Really, MVP kind of moment, if you ask me, for J.D. Martinez. But the bullpen gave it back. And it feels like an ongoing theme with the Red Sox. The bullpen keeps giving it back, and they win in spite of the bullpen. So the question is, and a lot of you get on me for this, why do you focus on the negative? So again, my question is, Can they win that way in October? Do you really think they can win doing what they did last night in the month of October? Because I don't. Ramon is in Needham. Ramon, what do you got, pal?
Hey, how are you, man? The wrestler can win in October only if one guy step up. Chris Sale needs to step up and send a message to the other pitch. If he wins the game one, 7 innings, 12 K, and he sends a message, the other pitch is going to step up. He's the only guy they need it in October. If he stay up, everything going to be to the worst.
Okay. Yeah, so listen, Ramon, Sale to me is a given. If Sale pitches poorly, they're in trouble. And I would say the same with the Yankees about Severino, although Severino pitched poorly last October, and the Yankees won in spite of it. Now, New York ultimately got to Game 7 of the LCS before they collapsed, and I say collapsed, before they gave in, or before they were defeated. Because I don't think the Yankees quit or anything like that, so I don't want that to come out wrong. But before they were done in, okay? Before they were done in. So, given the way the Red Sox starting pitching has gone in the last two postseasons, they absolutely positively need Chris Sale. And I actually think that in the next, you know, in the next few spots in the rotation, if Sale pitches well, they can get by with mediocrity if their bullpen's good enough. Because their lineup this year is, it's terrific. I mean, they lead the majors in runs scored. Joe is in Pittsfield. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, Maz, the answer to your question is no, they can't win with that bullpen the way it is. I think a key to the postseason is going to be Eddie Rodriguez is going to give Cora options. He can either start or come out of the bullpen for long relief. I think you need a left-hander once in a while. I'm not big on lefty-righty, but there are some left-handed hitters that have real trouble with left-handed pitchers. And I just think Dombrowski not getting a left-hander, even if he isn't great, was a mistake. But you already mentioned Bogaerts. Do you think he came back too early? Because his swing looks very weak to me. And they're so far ahead, I wonder if with Devers back, they're going to rest him.
Okay, so Joe, look, I want to see how it goes with Bogaerts. He's a history of fading in the second half. He had problems last year after he got hit by a pitcher and was not the same player. He doesn't look right to me either. Remember that the Bogaerts early in the year was driving the ball, and the approach was different. Last night in that game, I think he got a hit late, right, where he kind of squirted a ball to right field, and that's how I would put it, that it was a squirt. At least that's what it felt like. And so I'll double-check it here. Maybe it came in the 10th inning. I was pretty sure he got a hit late in that game, though. But he's not hitting the ball or swinging the bat with any kind of authority. So now, with regard to the bullpen, I'm not married to a lefty in the bullpen. If the Red Sox think Nathan Eovaldi is the guy that's going to win it for them out there in October, then I'll put Eovaldi out there. But to me, I'd go with Price. Okay? And the reason I go with Price is not because he's left-handed. The reason I go with David Price is because I don't think Price is as effective as a starter as he is as a reliever, and I think his impact out of the bullpen could be greater. And I think he's more replaceable in the starting rotation than he is in the bullpen. Maybe that's a better way to say it. I'm not sure there's anyone else in that rotation that can give them in the bullpen what I believe Price can based on last October. John is in Andover. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Maz, what's going on? Guys, I'm looking at the history of first-year Red Sox, and without getting too over the top here, I think, you know, to be a baseball historian, you kind of have to look at J.D. Martinez's first year and say, this might be the single greatest first year a Red Sox ever had. What do you guys think? Anything else come to mind? I'm looking at Manny's numbers in front of me, and I'll take J.D. all day over 2001 Manny.
So, John, are you talking about a free agent or a rookie?
I'm talking free agent, although I can't imagine a rookie's ever hit, you know, on pace for 45 home runs and a .340 average.
So okay,
you
so look.
Include both.
Yeah, so look, all right, so if you want to include both, you know, I'll entertain the question because it's an interesting way to put it. In terms of a free agent acquisition, you're probably right. I mean, I can't think of too many others, certainly offensively. I mean, if you include trades, Pedro Martinez's first year here was pretty good, although honestly, I think J.D. Martinez's first year is better. Pedro's second season, he really sort of went off the charts. The easy one in Red Sox history as far as rookies is Fred Lynn in 75. You know, won the MVP and the Rookie of the Year, was the only player in baseball history to do it for a long time. And then Ichiro replicated the feat. But honestly, that was a bit of a fraud performance by Ichiro because he wasn't a true rookie, at least in the, you know, in the youth sense. He was an international transplant with the Mariners. You know, and the other one that sticks out to me in terms of rookies is Nomar in 97. I mean, Nomar was off the charts in 1997, but the team wasn't very good. So the season was entirely about him. Dave is in Linfield. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, hi, Tony. I want to touch upon a couple of at-bats. The one you did first was the J.D. Martinez one. That was a no-brainer to walk the guy. I know it's a little bit unconventional, you know, first and third.
I agree. They should have walked him.
Third, he obviously would have done it, but it's just – and the guy can hit any pitch out of the park. So inside, outside, it doesn't matter. So that was crazy. I couldn't believe they didn't intentionally walk him there. It basically lost the game for Toronto.
Yeah, look, to me, absolutely stupid. Now, look, the Blue Jays are out of it. I don't know. Maybe they don't care. And I don't know a lot about Tapera, who was pitching at the time. Maybe they're trying to find out something about him. I have no idea. But I just know in that situation, you don't pitch to that guy, Div.
Yeah. And also, okay, so the smoke at bat, and I thought this was pretty funny, actually. So he goes to...
Okay, just hang on for a second, because I just want to let people know what you're talking about. Justin Smoke's home run against Kimbrel in the bottom of the ninth is what you're talking about. Go ahead.
Right. So he goes to 3-0 in smoke. They show the infield, the shift, and it's a very, very exaggerated shift. Like you don't really see there's hardly any... the third baseman is practically next to second base. And Lyon says... geez, he should, you know, think about throwing a bunt down. And I say to myself, well, he's going to be ball four here anyways. And next pitch grooves, and he hits a home run. So after the game, I don't usually watch the post game, but X, they go through it real quick, and they show the home run, and X, you know, he grooves this one. He hits it out, and he smirks and says, and the Lions wanted him to bunt. So I thought that was pretty funny on X-Body. You know, he wasn't supporting his Nesson teammate.
So listen, he was poking a little fun at him. And listen, I remember the comment. I was watching the game. And no sooner did it come out of Lyons' mouth. Again, they were in an exaggerated shift. Justin Smoke is up. It's one out in the ninth inning, and they're down a run. And Smoke never thought of bunting. So now Lyon says, geez, it's amazing here. He doesn't even think about it. He won't even engage. He hit the next pitch 400 feet, and the game was tied. So I think there's a couple of things here. First, I'm not the least bit surprised that he didn't try to bunt. Nobody tries to bunt anymore against a shift. And this is part of the problem with the game now. Teams know it, so they keep shifting. And teams keep hitting away. And you know why they hit away? Because of what Smoke did last night. They would rather have the home run once every 20 at-bats, or whatever the hell it is, and it's probably more than that into the shift, but whatever it is, they would rather have Justin Smoke swinging for the downs than bunting up the third baseline, which I think, honestly, is asinine, and it's ruining the game. And I used to be, hey, allow all the shifts you want. If you want to allow shifts and hitters don't adjust, that's their problem. If they're too stupid than to put a bunt on the third baseline or the first baseline if they're going the other way. But more often than not, it's the left-handed batters because the first baseman's not coming that way, that far off the bag. Then fine, let them get themselves out. Like, that's a hitter's problem. But teams do it now with such regularity and to such extreme that I think it needs to be outlawed because the game is killing itself. Really, it's turning into softball. That's right. It's turned into softball. Charlie's in Arlington. Charlie, quickly.
Yeah. Hey. So, given the way the negotiations went with JD in the spring and how they settled on this front loaded deal, do you think that they're going to have a hard time sort of tearing up that contract and giving them a new deal?
Well, Charlie, it depends on how he plays. He's got an opt out after next season. Then he's got another opt out after year three. And I can tell you, I think we all could make this judgment, that if J.D. Martinez has another year next year like he's having this year, there is no way he is going to remain in his current contract. He'll go right back on the market, and even if he only has to sign a three-year deal, let's say he goes back out, he'll get $100 million. Okay, he'll get $100 million on a three-year deal. His current deal with the Red Sox pays him $22 million a year. So he's, you know, it's 5-110 if he stays in it. And I don't have the exact breakdown, but to make it simple, let's just say it's $22 million a year. He'll make 44 in the first couple, and he'll have 56 remaining. He'll go back on the market and get more than 3-56. He'll get more than 3-56 from the Red Sox. They would give him that. Okay? Where the Red Sox get skittish is about the long-term deals, the length of the contract, the money. They'd be more than happy to pay J.D. Martinez $30 million a year right now for what he's giving them if it were on a 2 or 3 year deal. They'd be more than happy to do that. So if you're concerned about losing Martinez after next season, you should be. I mean, if I were him, I'd just keep hitting the crap out of the ball and then opt out. That's what I would do. And if I'm the Red Sox, I'd make sure I have options come the end of next season. 617-779-0985. We will wrap it up with your calls when we come back.